Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Devaki addressing Sri Krishna. After millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested and unmanifested is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the manifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Sesha Nag. Srila Prabhupada's purport. At the time of annihilation, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the mind, intelligence, and false ego, ahankara, and the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone remains as the origin of everything. The Lord is therefore known as Sesha Naga, as Adi Purusha, and by many other names. Devaki therefore prayed, after many millions of years, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahat Tattva. The Mahat Tattva again enters, by the force of time, into the non-manifested total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic Pradhan, and the Pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the director of the unmanifested total energy and the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies. So, this chapter is entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna. And Devaki is offering prayers and glorification to Lord Krishna. And we can see how advanced Devaki is. I mean, this prayer is just amazing. And it's just spontaneously arose when she saw Lord Krishna. And so she understands that there are different Vedas, some of which describe Krishna as imperceivable through words, and the mind, in other words, inconceivable, not being able to be perceived by the material senses. But she understands that Krishna is the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation, the greatest of everything, completely effulgent, even eclipsing the sun. And there is no material cause. Krishna appears by his own sweet will and is known as causeless. He is free from change and deviation. He is absolute, yet he's always expanding at every moment. Therefore, Devaki understands that Krishna is directly the origin of all Vedic statements. And by understanding Krishna, one gradually understands everything. And this Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita in several verses. I'll quote a few. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmritir jnanam apohanam cha. Sarvasya Chaham Hridi, I am situated in the heart of everybody. Krishna is situated in everybody's heart. Matta smritir jnanam, and from me comes knowledge and comes remembrance. So whatever we can remember is by the mercy of Krishna, and whatever we know is by the mercy of Krishna. So which remembrance is Krishna talking about? He's in charge or in control of the smriti shakti, the power to remember. And that is to remember that we are A, spirit soul, B, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and that we are his eternal servitor, das, 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 anudas. We are always in the position of das, 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 anudas. And therefore, I refer to everyone else as Prabhu. Because if I'm at the end, if I'm last, then everyone else is ahead of me. It's logical. So everyone else is my Prabhu, which means my master, because I am your servant. If I am your servant, then you must be my master. So this is the eternal constitutional position of every living entity in the material world, in the spiritual world. So when we're in that consciousness of das, 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 anudas, we are in our eternal constitutional position. What happens if we're not in that position? What if I'm not seeing myself as the servant of the servant of the servant? What state is that called in Sanskrit? There's a Sanskrit word for that. Maya. That which is not. As soon as I'm thinking that someone else is my servitor, that I'm actually the master and someone should serve me, then I'm no longer in my constitutional position, but I'm under the influence of the material energy. Is that clear? So we should take the humble position. It doesn't mean that we have low self-esteem. It does not mean that we allow people to use us or abuse us. What it means is that we always respond in every situation in a gentle way, in a humble way, in a compassionate way, even when correcting others. For example, someone may do something wrong in the temple, and the temple commander may come and say, "You blockhead, you idiot, look what you've done, you're worthless, you shouldn't even be here in the temple." That's one way of chastising, but that's not, he's not in his constitutional position. Now, how would he correct that person? He would say, "My dear Prabhu, you know, I know that you can do much better than what you've done. You're not working to your full capacity. I would humbly request you to please do the best that you can do for Krishna, because Krishna deserves your best, and I know that you can do your best." And in this way, he's also being corrected, but in a humble way, in the Vaishnava way. Is that clear? My godbrother Vishnujan Maharaj, when he was a brahmachari, he was made temple commander. He was temple commander because he commanded so much respect. He was always chanting the holy names. When he wasn't chanting the holy names, he was always reciting the pastimes of Krishna book and telling different pastimes to different people. So after the morning program, he would take his madanga to the parking lot. He would lean against the car and he would chant the holy names. And people would come up to him and say, "What service needs to be done?" He said, "Well, we need someone to clean the kitchen." And someone else would come, "Well, you need to sweep the floor." And when they, and he would, in this way, this is how he would delegate authority. And when they were finished washing the pots or sweeping the temple, they'd come back and, "What's next? Anything else?" That's how you delegate authority. People come to you and say, "How can I serve you?" Because they had so much respect and love for him. And why did they have so much respect and love for him? Because he had so much love and respect for them also. Because he was always in his constitutional position as spirit soul. The same as Srila Prabhupada. He was always in his constitutional position. Sometimes he would have to chastise somebody. But then he would apologize. Please don't mind. You know, I have to teach you. I'm your spiritual master. Please don't mind. Now, of course, if that person made the same mistake over and over and over again, then Prabhupada would speak the truth. He'd say, you are a fool. But Prabhupada always spoke facts, and he never flattered anyone or never became angry. Shruta Kirti told me this wonderful story. Prabhupada and he were waiting in the Italian airport, waiting for the plane from Rome to the next destination. And they're sitting there chanting japa. And then Prabhupada remarked to Shruta Kirti, these Italian women are very beautiful. Shruta Kirti was a little shocked to hear that. And there was one lady walking by, and she heard Srila Prabhupada. And she stopped and turned around and said, oh, thank you. And Prabhupada said, it's not a compliment, it's just a fact. So she was pleased. So everyone loved Prabhupada because he was a Vaishnava. He was kind and compassionate. Because that is the constitutional position of every living entity in the spiritual realm, because that's Krishna's mentality. Krishna is like that. Krishna is the supreme controller, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He is the controller of all other controllers. There are so many controllers, but of all those controllers, he's the Param Ishvara, the supreme controller. He's the cause of all causes. He's beginningless, anadir, Adi Govinda. But when he wants to begin anything, he takes the position of playing his flute. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. And he likes to take the position eternally as a barefoot cowherd boy herding cows in the pasturing grounds. The most humble position. Yet he is the most powerful of all, Trikalagya. He knows everything. He creates everything, and at the end of the annihilation, everything merges back into him. And when he begins to create again, everything comes out from him. But yet he's a cowherd boy, and he loves to be chastised by Mother Yashoda. And he explains to Mother Yashoda that he prefers her chastisement than all the prayers of the personified Vedas. Because Mother Yashoda is chastising out of love. So this whole bhakti yoga process is meant to bring out that divine love that is in everyone's heart. Everyone in this room, there's pure divine love in your heart. The only problem is, it's not coming out purely, it's not coming out divinely. And the reason it's not coming out purely is because there are anartas in the heart. The unwanted things, anarta. We all know what they are: anger, envy, greed, lust, arrogance, prejudice, the list goes on. So just like we have white light here, but if we put a red color bulb, then you'd get red light. If you put a blue color bulb, you get blue light. But actually, the light's always white. It's just filtered through a different filter, a blue filter or a red filter. Similarly, in our heart is pure love, but when it's filtered through these anartas, it comes out impure, angry, prejudicial, lusty, etc. So the whole process of bhakti yoga is to purify the heart. And there's a secret mantra, which I'll share with you, that completely purifies your heart. It goes like this. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. However, although there are no hard and fast rules to chanting, you can chant anywhere, anytime, in any situation, by anybody, no matter whether They're no matter of gender, color, ethnicity, whatever. But it has to be done correctly. There are 10 offenses to chanting the holy name, and if we chant offensively, we do not get the result. So the first and foremost offense, Srila Prabhupada explains, is to criticize the other devotees. He used the word blaspheme, sadhuninda, to blaspheme the devotees who are dedicating their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. Who are those devotees who are dedicating their lives to propagating the holy names of the Lord? Who is it that we're not supposed to blaspheme? Well, everybody in this room. Everybody who's chanting Hare Krishna. Do you know that during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada was just Abai Babu. He was the grihastha businessman who came to the temple in the evenings and would chant Hare Krishna. He was never a president. He was never a sannyasi. He was never a leader in the Gaudiya Math. And some of his godbrothers referred to him as a kacha grihastha. You're kind of like a rotten grihastha. So they were shocked when all of a sudden this congregational member became the next acharya and fulfilled the prophecy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How is it possible? He was never one of the leaders. He was hardly in the mat. But Krishna chooses whoever he wants. Krishna chooses the most humble, the most purified, the most dedicated, the most committed, and he empowers him. Srila Prabhupada was glorified many times in so many different situations by so many people. You have done amazing. You have fulfilled the prophecy. You've spread the holy names all over the world. But Prabhupada never took the credit. He said, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tar Parvartan. Without being empowered by Krishna, no one can do such a thing. So, Krishna empowered Srila Prabhupada. But Krishna can also empower us. Because he's in our heart. Sarvasya chahamhari sannivishto matta smritir. Comes remembrance that we're the humble servant of the servant of the servant. That we're spirit soul, part and parcel of the Lord. All that remembrance comes back. Gyan shakti, the knowledge of who is Krishna. Who are the pure devotees? Who are the innocent ones? Who are the envious persons? And how to relate to each one? How to reciprocate with each group of persons or living entities that we come across? How to exhibit compassion, commitment, humility, affection? How to uplift others? Gyan. This is called Sambandha Gyan. It's a very deep topic. Sambandha means relationships. It discusses our relationship with every other living entity, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead down to the bacteria, how we relate. And Abhideya Tattva, the three tattvas, Lord Chaitanya taught Bhakti Yoga according to three tattvas. Number one, Sambandha. You have to know your relationship with every other living entity. Abhideya Tattva. Now that you know what is your relationship, how do we behave with each and every single living entity, no matter what body they're in? And then Prayojan Tattva. What is the ultimate goal? By behaving properly, Abhideya, we achieve Prayojan Tattva, the ultimate goal. Back to home, back to Godhead. But if we do things wrong, if we're not in our constitutional position, Krishna says in that shloka, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sannivishto Matta Smritir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Apohan Shakti, the covering potency, the forgetful potency. Krishna will make you forget that you're spirit soul. You forget that you're the servant. He will cover you so that you will think that you're the body. You will think that I'm either male or female, English or Indian, black or white, rich or poor, beautiful or ugly, tall or short, fat or thin. Why would Krishna cover his devotees? Who knows the answer? Sorry? I didn't hear you. Exactly. Because that's our desire. He's in our heart. He knows what our desire is. I may present myself as Pakka first class Vaishnava, but Krishna knows what's going on inside me. And I know also. And I know that Krishna knows. And I know that Krishna sees everything I do. He hears everything I say. He understands every thought I have, and he knows the desires in my heart. So who am I fooling? Not Krishna. I can only fool myself. So when Krishna sees that we're interested in sense gratification, although I may present myself in a different way, then he covers me so that I can fulfill my desires. Maybe I want to lord it over somebody else. Okay, he'll cover me so I can lord it over, because otherwise I'm a servant. That's my eternal constitutional position. So Krishna from within our hearts empowers us or disempowers us according to our own desire. Then there's another verse. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Tesham, anybody who worships me. How? Bhajatam, worship. How? Priti purvakam, with complete love. In other words, devotional service. Then dadami buddhi yogam tam, I will give that person the pure intelligence of yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. Yoga means union with Krishna. I will give you that pure intelligence so that you can unite with me. Yena mam upayanti te, so that you can return to me, to my nitya lila. Krishna will invite us back to his Nitya Lila by his side in Goloka Vrindavan. But we have to fit in, just like a fish. You can take the fish, put him, let's say you take a dolphin, put him in Buckingham Palace on the throne, he's going to die within a few hours, if not sooner, because that's not his environment. His environment is in the water. Conversely, if you put us in the ocean, we can't be happy there. We'll die also. That's not our environment. We don't fit in the fish's environment, and the fish doesn't fit in our environment. Now, if we want to fit into Krishna's environment in the spiritual realm, what is the environment of Goloka Vrindavan? Pure love, Krishna prema. So we won't fit in if we don't have that. We'll be a fish out of water. So where do we develop this prema? Right here and now. And by chanting the holy names of the Lord. Harinama, 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 eva kevalam, kalo nasjeva, 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 katiranyata. How many people know this shloka? What does it mean? It means that there is no other way to attain the goal. Gatir. Gatir means goal or destination, except chanting the holy names. Lord Chaitanya emphasized this verse again and again and again. Now this verse, how many times is it emphasized that the only method to become pure, to return back home, back to God, it is to chant the holy names. How many times is it emphasized in this verse? He says three. He says three. Any other? Well, the answer is 8. Let me go through it with you so you get it. Harinama, Harinama, Harinama. That's 3 times emphasized, right? Ava, what does Ava mean? Ava means certainly. Certainly means 100% guarantee. Is that an emphasis? Okay, 4. Kevalam. Kevalam means only. Only means just this, everything else rejected. Is that an emphasis? Nasteva, nasteva, nasteva. No other way, no other way, no other way. 8 times. 4 positive, 4 negative. Not this, only this. 8 times in this verse. There's only 11 words in the shloka, and 8 of them are emphasizing the holy name is everything. But you have to do it correctly. So the first mistake we make is criticizing the devotees, blaspheming the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. And Prabhupada defined for us what is the meaning of blasphemy, just so that we're all clear. What does he mean when he says blaspheming the devotees is an offense? Blasphemy means that some devotee is doing very well, he's doing nice service, and he's getting the credit for that service, and I know that he's deserving of that credit, but still I refuse to give it, and I will find fault with him. Clear? Is that clear? I know that that person's worthy of my honor and respect, but still I refuse to give it. It's not that you don't know. You do know, and still you refuse to give it. Find fault. Criticize him behind his back. This is called blaspheming. This is Prabhupada's definition. So that's the first and foremost offense that will nullify all our chanting. And I've analyzed this, and I've seen how my God brothers and God sisters and God nephews and God nieces who are chanting properly in the correct frame of mind, how they're making so much advancement. And on the other hand, I've seen devotees who are not following that and are criticizing, finding fault, blaspheming, and they're not making any advancement whatsoever. In fact, I see them going backwards. And sometimes I think it would have been better if they never would have even come to this movement. Krishna says that everyone is on my path in all respects. Some are going forward, some are staying in the same place, and some are going backwards. Some people have left this movement, and they have even gone back to meat eating. Some have even gone back to joining anti-cult movements and speaking ill about their Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas. Because if you chant the holy name offense and you commit these offenses, you gradually start to go mad. And Krishna covers you. Matasmitirgyanam apohanam cha. His apohan shakti covers us. And then the second most, that was the first foremost offense. The second most offense is the 10th offense, which is to be inattentive while chanting and to maintain material attachments even after hearing so many instructions on the matter. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained in depth that if we can solve the problem of the 10th offense, we solve all our problems. So let me explain how that works. If you chant with care and attention, and Prabhupada explained, care means carefully. It also means in a caring way, devotionally. With care and attention. Attention means with full focus and concentration on the holy names. If you chant that way, the holy name enters into our ear and is received within our heart and purifies our heart. So by chanting that way, the heart becomes purified. And when the heart becomes purified, you become a pure devotee. When you're a pure devotee, you don't commit any offenses. When you take care of the tenth offense, the tenth offense takes care of you. So we really want to focus with our attention and with care. So over the years, I've developed many different strategies to chant attentively and with care. And if we don't focus on this, what happens? We chant inattentively. What does it mean, inattentive chanting? Well, you pick up your beads and you start chanting. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And where does your mind go? I was becoming a witness. Where is my mind going? Did it go to Krishna Leela or did it go to my Leela? My mind always went to my Leela. And I found that when I was chanting japa, I could think very clearly and I would solve some of my problems. So after a couple of years, I developed this habit that whenever there was some problem I couldn't solve, I'd pick up my beads, start chanting, and then I'd be able to think it through and solve the problem. So I did this for a number of years, and then I had an epiphany. Oh my God! What am I doing? I'm deliberately chanting inattentively to solve my material problems. And I was shocked. And then I realized I'd got to stop this immediately. So I made a promise to myself, a sankalpa. I will not chant if I'm not hearing the holy name, if I can't hear, because my mind is inattentive. So whenever my mind would start wandering, I'd stop the chanting for a moment or two, take a deep breath, and shake that thought out of my mind and continue. And if the mind was really pushing me, then I would have to take a deep breath and preach to my mind. My dear mind, you don't need to think about this right now. This is Krishna's time. We're going to give the next 2 hours to Krishna. You can have the other 22 hours. For the next 22 hours, you can think whatever you want, but these 2 hours are for Krishna. Then I tried different strategies. I began to think of the mind as an untrained child. You know, parents know if you don't train your children, they become a terror. You have to train them to be polite, be well-behaved, you know, all these things. So we have to deal with the mind. We have to chant with care and attention. Now, you all went to school. You've all sat in the classroom and you took notes, right? You're all educated. Am I correct? Or am I wrong? Looks like I'm wrong. Or are you too tired to raise your hand? Okay. So do you remember sitting in the classroom, the professor is speaking and you're taking notes? How many people remember that? Did you ever have the experience that while you're taking notes, your mind wanders and you don't hear what the professor says, and then you have to lean and copy the notes from your neighbor and put them in your notes? Has anybody ever had that experience? Everybody. You know what this teaches us? I had this realization. This was a very deep, profound understanding that I had. That when you think, you can't hear. Whenever you think, you can't hear. And that's the proof. You've all experienced it. Sometimes you're in a conversation with somebody, they're telling you something and you're thinking about something else, and then they say, well, what do you think of that? Oh, I'm sorry, what did you say? You know, anybody have that experience? When you think, you can't hear, write it down, because this is the most important lesson that you're going to get today. When you think, you can't hear. Therefore, if you're chanting your japa and your mind starts thinking, you can't hear the holy name. It means that the holy name is not entering into your ear. The door is closed. Therefore, it's not coming into your heart and it's not purifying your heart. Plus, you're committing an offense, because it's an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So when I realized that I was chanting 16 rounds offensively, I was shocked, and I have to make a change. This is not going to work. So that's when I became serious to really work on coming up with different tactics and strategies to control the mind and to hear the holy name and to chant with care and attention. We all have to do that, because 2 hours a day of aparad, nam aparad, is not going to bring us to Krishna prema. Is that logical? Is that fair? It's fair. Because if other people are chanting purely, they get the result, and I'm doing it wrong, why should I expect to get the result? That would be a cheating mentality. I get the same result doing it wrong as someone who's doing it right. So we've been given everything. We have the process. We know what we have to do. We've been guided by Srila Prabhupada, the do's, the don'ts. Everything is there. We're on the right track. But if we do it wrong, we're wasting our time. So I'm just going to close with one comment here, that you're all here for a particular reason, because you are dedicated to becoming self-realized and going back home, back to Godhead. I know this. Krishna knows this. Right? That's why you're here, right? It's not just for free room and board, right? But there's another reason that you're here. And that other reason is that in your last life, you were unsuccessful in your yoga practice. You came back again. And again, you're sitting in the class. And then what about the next year, next life? You're going to again be sitting in the class the next life? And how about the life after that? 22nd century, 23rd century, 24th century. When do you finally say, enough, I've got to get serious? So I would suggest that this is the life to say, enough. It's time to get serious. And I'll tell you why. Because this is the best opportunity you've ever had in millions of births to go back home, back to Godhead. You've never had such a great opportunity that Prabhupada was just here. We're the pioneers of fulfilling Lord Chaitanya's prophecy and spreading all over the world. We get special dispensation. If we can't focus and go back to Godhead in this life, let's say I come back in the 22nd century again, sitting in the class, Prabhupada will be now a Purva Acharya, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, way in the past. Who knows who will be the spiritual masters, a disciple of disciple of disciple of disciple of Prabhupada. Who knows where ISKCON will be, how on the track or off the track they'll be. Who knows? Who would take such a risk? Right now, this is the best opportunity we've ever had, and we'll never get as good an opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. And if I blow it in this life, then I must be fool number one. So here we see how Devaki, so advanced, she has such a deep understanding and appreciation for Krishna. Not just appreciation, not just love, but a deep philosophical understanding. Where did she get it from? From within the heart. She's also in, Krishna's also in Devaki's heart. So she's empowered. We shall also become empowered, but it has to be our desire. And I remember something that Prabhupada told me many, many, many years ago, which stuck with me, and I share it with everybody. He said, first deserve, then desire. First deserve, then desire. So we may desire to go back home, back to Godhead, but first deserve it. Do your service. Do it properly, with care and attention. Don't commit any offenses. And then you're guaranteed. Oh, one last thing Prabhupada told in a class in 1975 in Los Angeles. He said, at the end of the talk, he said, Saul, if you follow all the instructions that I've given you, chanting of the japa, attending the arti, kirtan, eating only mahaprasad, going out, distributing books and distributing the holy names. If you follow all my instructions, I guarantee that in this life you go back home, back to Godhead. So I was there, I heard it, Prabhupada gave a guarantee. Of course, I was thinking, how can Prabhupada give that guarantee? Because it's Krishna that does all this. And I thought about it and thought about it for years, and then the answer came to me. Obviously, Prabhupada doesn't speculate. He doesn't say things. Krishna must have said to him, declare it boldly, Srila Prabhupada, that if your disciples follow your instructions, that they've guaranteed to go back home, back to Godhead, just like he said to Arjuna. Declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee shall never perish. So there you have it. It's in your hand. If you're back in the 22nd century, it's nobody's fault but your own. And when you get back home, back to Godhead, please say a prayer for me. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.